You're listening to the Belly Dance Geek Clubhouse at bellydancegeek.com.
Hello, everybody. This is Heather Wayman, director at Belly Dance Geek, and I want to welcome you to episode 73 of the Belly Dance Geek Clubhouse. The Belly Dance Geek Clubhouse is the place where dancers can get together and geek out on all of those things that are hard to get in classes and on DVDs. If you want help with the what, things like moves, combos, and choreography, there are a lot of resources out there for you. But if you need help with the why and the how, things like musicality and culture, business and composition, that can be a lot harder to find. So every month we interview a different guest expert on a different geeky topic, and we always have time for questions and answers so you can geek out too. So if you think that knowledge and creativity go together like chocolate and peanut butter, or maybe red wine and chocolate, you are in the right place. And if you've got a product or a service or an event that you'd like to promote, we'd love to have you become a Clubhouse sponsor. It helps us cover the cost of producing the show, and it helps you reach over 1,500 enthusiastic and engaged belly dance geeks. You can find info about sponsoring the Clubhouse at bellydancegeek.com/sponsor. My guest today is Aziza of Montreal, and I'm so excited to have you with us, and I know a lot of other folks are excited to hear what you have to say about practice and all sorts of other things. Aziza is a generous master instructor who presents well-organized, relevant, and useful material that is accessible and challenging to all levels, from beginner to professional. She's maintained an active year-round touring schedule for 20 plus years to more than 50 countries. In 2010, Aziza started her intensive week-long dream camp located in Valmorin, Quebec, where three times a year, belly dancers from across the globe come together to train, eat, play, and dance in a unique, supportive environment with top master instructors. Aziza also runs an online studio featuring group classes, one-on-one coaching, and streaming videos accessible from anywhere in the world. So you can take class with Aziza from anywhere, no matter where you are. Welcome, Aziza.
Hello, Heather, and everyone that's joined us.
Thank you so much for agreeing to be my guest here on the Clubhouse. I always start off every call the same way. I would love for you to tell us your origin story. How did you get started in belly dance?
Okay, I think my story is pretty typical as far as starting Oriental dance, but I'm gonna go way back into where I actually started dancing. I started ballet when I was 3 years old, and I did classical ballet for 15 years until I was 18. And then it became very clear that I was not going to be a professional ballerina, and I thought my dance was over. I thought I had to leave it behind me. However, I actually moved to Hawaii for 1 year and quit dance. And while I was in Hawaii, I was really missing dancing. And it really opened my eyes to the fact that there is more out there than just classical ballet. And I became hungry to try other dance forms. So at 18, I was in Hawaii for 1 year. So at 19, I came back to Oregon, and then I started experimenting with dance forms that I hadn't tried before, like lyrical jazz and African and just a whole lot of different dance forms that I had never experienced before. And then, like many people, I had a really good friend of mine who wanted to take a belly dance class. She was actually Greek, and her aunt had given her a coin belt, and she wanted to go to a belly dance class. And she said, "Will you please come to the dance class with me?" And me, I had seen belly dance before. I was aware of belly dance. I'd seen a James Bond movie with a belly dancer in it. I had always been kind of intrigued by Oriental dance. But being a ballet snob, I was like, that's not really dance. And yes, so I went along with her kind of not taking it very seriously. So I started I was just before my 21st birthday. And then I started with Ruby Souter in Vancouver, Washington. And from my first class, I was absolutely, absolutely hooked. So that's how I got started in the dance.
Fantastic. Okay. You see, yeah. I started a little bit in ballet too, but not until much, much later. Anyway, I think it's interesting how different dance styles can either not necessarily lead us to belly dance, but certainly influence our thoughts about belly dance. Yeah. Anyway.
I honestly do not think that it's absolutely a requirement to take other dance forms. I think the dance form is what it is, but I am really glad that I had that foundation. So I often say to some of my students, if they're having issues with their feet or with their turns, that taking a classical ballet class is really good.
Yeah, I think cross training in any dance form it's eye opening, because if you only do one type of dance form, it's so easy to get overuse injuries, or just have a narrow view of the dance. And not to say that there's anything wrong with just doing one form of dance, but I think we broaden our horizons when we do more than one genre.
Yes, and even now, especially now, I take other dance classes. I do drop-in classes when I'm not on tour, and it's for a variety of reasons. Sometimes I get inspiration, but it also reminds me what it feels like to be a student and to not know what you're doing. Yeah, so I make that part of my practice when I'm not on tour too.
Are there specific types of dance that you take as a drop-in student, or is just...
I do have a favorite lyrical jazz teacher named Don Jordan. Those of you that have come to my dream camps, I've had him come and do some classes. He's really old school jazz. I love him very much. Just recently, I tried a house dance class, which I had no idea what house dance was. And I had a local dancer here that suggested that we go and check it out. And it was so hard, and I was sweating within the first 15 minutes. But just that one class really made me take a different look of how I'm structuring my classes. So yeah, it made me really think about and approach and journal a lot about how I want to apply what I really liked about that class to my own classes.
So what is house dance?
House dance is a particular kind of dance that you do to house music. Yeah. Okay. I'm that old lady that said, house dance, is it at your house?
Okay. I'm that same old lady, because I'm like, oh, what is house music? Okay. I'll be looking this up later too. I didn't think I was that square, but apparently I am. Okay. Moving on. Okay. So this is, we're going to talk about practice. I would love for you to tell everybody, you know, I think a lot of people think, oh, you know, she's a very experienced dancer. She tours, she does all of these things. She probably doesn't need to practice, or, you know, whatever. What does your practice habit look like?
Well, I have really taken a good look at how I practice and changed the way that I approach practicing really in the last 3 years. It was about 3 years ago, and it came out of an experience I had with Lisa Zahia, who also teaches at Dream Camp too. I can talk about her a little bit more later, but I organized a salon where I invited some different people to come and teach classes, just a small group of us, and we all taught to each other. And at that salon, I had told her that, like everyone, I was struggling with personal practice, because I always felt like I had so many other obligations, like I have to get ready for workshops or preparing for classes, and it just seems like all my energy went out to other people and I wasn't doing my own personal practice. And so she actually helped me come up with this system, and I have stuck with it, and it has really helped me out a lot. So what I do is I take a look at my schedule for the week, and I do this on Sunday. I take a look at what my schedule is for the upcoming week, and I have a whiteboard where I put on the board exactly what my schedule is, what my obligations are. And then after I take a look at what my schedule is, then I come up with a goal on how much time I'm going to spend on personal practice. And I also have a goal on how much time I'm spending on body maintenance. Yes, that would be working out or stretching and also meditation too. That's also in my. So what I do is, if you can imagine, if you can picture a fundraising goal like ladder, do you know what I'm talking about? So you have like a fundraising goal type situation and it has a ladder. And I will, like, I took a look at my week. I just did my board earlier today. And I took a look at my, what's that?
You want to show it?
Oh, yes. I thought this was just recorded. I wasn't sure if they'd see it.
Well, the folks on the call, the live call attendees will get to see it.
Okay.
Go ahead and show it. Yeah, go ahead and show it. Because
I think if I show it to you, it's going to be backwards, but you can at least have an idea. It's a big board. Yes, it's a very big board because I keep it in my studio where I practice so that I have a visual.
Right. Okay, it's not back, it's readable. So if you explain it verbally, the folks on the call can see it visually, and the folks that are getting the recording will have an idea of what you're talking about. So there's two sides.
Yes, so there's two sides. So I have on one side, on this side, I have my body maintenance. This is sweat, stretch, and meditate. And because I am Virgo, I color code it too. So I have sweat is red. Stretch is green and meditate is blue. And then over on the other side, I have my dance. And under dance, I have drill, performance, content, and discovery.
Wow.
And those are color coded as well. Color. And then I also list on my board my next upcoming workshops that I have to prepare for. And then my mentorship groups, which we can maybe talk about a little bit later. Mm-hmm. And what I want to do for that.
Okay. Yes. And so every day of the week is also notated. And there are six parts. Six is the winner of this ladder on each side.
But this will change depending on what my week looks like.
Oh, okay. So sometimes there's more and sometimes there's less slots to fill in.
Yes.
Okay. And so every time you do, let's say for instance, every time you do a sweat segment, whatever it is, I'm assuming that each one of these segments in your ladder represents a time.
Yes, it's 1 hour.
Okay.
Each segment. So actually right before I got on, I was ready to go a little bit early. So I threw on a video, a booty workout, and I did a 15 minute just before this, our online. So I got to fill in a little 15 minutes.
Okay, so a quarter of that block number one was filled in with red, which is a sweat segment, and that represented your booty workout.
Yeah.
And so once you get to an hour of sweat, you've got four segments or a whole segment of...
Each segment might have, like tomorrow or actually tonight later on, because I worked my booty, I'm probably going to stretch before I go to bed. And so I'll add a blue.
Right on.
No, a green.
For stretch.
So that'll be a half hour. So what I see is that it can be cumulative. Yes. So instead of saying that I have to work out for 2 hours or I have to dance practice for 2 hours, I can, if I just have 15 minutes in between some online classes or in between, then I can drill something or work on a piece of performance, and that cumulative, yes, but I have to try to reach for this week, it's 6 hours of dance and it is 6 hours of working out. And it's a little bit light this week because it's New Year's, so I gave myself a little break. Yes.
Great. And it's a nice visual too, because everything's color-coded. I love color-coding. And you can see yourself get to the goal.
Yes, and what I do is if I reach my goal in both of them, it has to be both, then I can go to the spa.
Going to the spa. That's fantastic. And that happens every week?
No, it does not. And in 3 years that I've been doing this, it's less than 5 times.
Really?
Yes. But see, the goal is, for me, it's the visual. It makes me want to fill it in. And I don't get discouraged if I don't. I just try to do a little better every week. And sometimes my goal is just to get more dance in than to get working out in, because sometimes I procrastinate by working out instead of doing my own personal practice. So that's one of the things that I kind of have to work on. So sometimes it's just about doing better than the week before. And for me, it's fantastic if I can make my goal. It's glorious. But just having this visual and realizing how much I am working out, even if I only do it in 15 or half an hour at a time, that it makes a difference. And then it gives me a visual of how much I'm really practicing.
So I've got two main takeaways that I want to make sure everybody gets out of this. One, Aziza, being who she is human, just like the rest of us, okay? And two, practice doesn't have to be an all or nothing proposition. A little bit goes a long way, and it all adds up. So just do it. Plug it in little tiny places wherever you can, it's fantastic. So I love that you shared your board. I hope that the folks that are getting the recording will be able to garner. And you know what? Maybe I'll talk to you about maybe getting some snapshots to put on the episode page so that people can see what that looks like.
Sure.
I think we can do that. Okay. How about another thing that I think is really important to me, and we've talked about this, is recording your practice. Do you want to talk about that?
Yes. One of the things that I find the most effective is videotaping my practices and my drilling, not just choreography, not just performance, but my drills too. I find it really effective because a lot of times when we're watching ourselves in the mirror, it doesn't have the same effect. Like you see it and it goes and you're not able to really analyze what it looks like. So for me, it was a little daunting at first because I don't like watching myself on video and I find myself getting really critical, but it became easier and I look at it as a tool and I look at it as a tool that really works. So I will, if I'm working on one particular movement, one particular technique, then I have a 2.5 minute track that I will practice to. So I will drill for 2.5 minutes and then I stop and take a look. And if it doesn't look the way I want it to, then I go back and do it again. And I try to make it feel different so that it will look different. And then I go back and forth, it's what I do. And if I'm working on a particular choreography, there are times where I will run the whole thing and just do like discovery, where I just improvise and I'll record it and then I'll watch and I see what works. And I do more of what works, and then I let go of what isn't working. If I'm working on one particular section of a choreography, then I use tempo slow, and I loop that section. And then I will do the same thing. I will just do that section and record it and then watch it.
Tempo slow. Is that
It's an app. It's a free app. And I use this a lot for when I'm teaching workshops and when I'm doing choreography, because you can put tracks in and you can slow it down. And also it helps to speed it up too.
Oh yeah.
Yes, because if you can do it sped up, then it feels a lot easier when it's at exactly the right tempo.
That's right, especially when there are zills involved. Is that app an Android or a Windows app?
It's an Android app, I believe.
Oh, excellent. Okay, because I just shared an Apple-based app for Apple products, and I'm looking for one for Android. So I'll look into that so we can share that. I'm gonna look it up and I'll put it on the episode.
Yeah, page. I'm not positive.
Yeah, that's okay. I'll look it up. All of the resources that we mention in this call will be notated on the bottom of the episode page, so you'll be able to go back and check those things out too. So I'm making notes. Okay, so I've loved that you record your drills also. I use recording a lot, but usually I'm thinking back now, it's always choreography and, you know, learning things. Drilling is very important to record also. And then you mentioned making it feel different so that you can get it Because you need to feel what the move feels like when it looks like you want it to look, so that you
It
can
is really, it is one of the most simple concepts in it, but it really is effective. If you want your dance to look different, it has to feel different. If it doesn't feel different, then it's not going to look different. So
I think a lot
that's
of us, I'm raising my hand, get into the rut of doing the same thing over and over and over again when you're trying to make something. Anyway, I'll just leave that there.
Well, I think it's typical for a lot of people. What you think is happening in your mind, and then you watch the video and you're like, I swear my range of motion was bigger than that, or my shimmies were bigger than that. I know that's a really common thing that people say. So honestly, little bits of recording and drilling and trying to just remind your body how much effort it takes in order to make that shimmy really big so you can be seen from far away. Since now we're on big stages now, more often than we are in more intimate situations. So yeah, I think it's really important to remind yourself how much effort it takes to make those really big movements.
Yeah, very true. Very true. So as you record, do you review that throughout your practice, or do you review it all at the end? How does that, does it
No,
take up a
I
lot
do it, I look at it, and I race it.
time?
Yeah, nobody is going to see this but me.
Oh,
That's
yeah.
one of the things that has helped me with this, because I know for a lot of people, seeing themselves is really, it's hard. I know that. But for me, it's like straight up, just like the mirror is a tool. These videos are a tool, and I do them in little sections. I look at it, and then I go back and try it again, and then I look at it and try it again, and I erase it every time. And it has gotten so much easier, and now I really don't care what I look like. Oh, except every time I practice, I put on lipstick because otherwise, I do put really bright lipstick on because it's a little easier to watch if I have lipstick on.
Yeah, I do that too. Although I have to say, I don't erase everything. I will upload some of the videos to a private YouTube channel that no one else can see except for my coach. And I think it's really great to go back to things that you've done, 6 months ago, 1 year ago, because you can see how far things have progressed, and that is really fun. But as far as when you do this, I just want to impress upon people that might be listening that recording is difficult because you have to watch it. But a lot of times I think people think that it'll take up too much time in their practice, and it really doesn't have to. It's a quick thing, right?
Yes. I have a tripod, and I bought a little thing to go on the tripod, and I just use my iPad. And I just take the iPad, I look at it, I erase it, I put it back up, and I record because
Yeah.
it's quick and it's easy.
Quick and easy. I love it. When you are on tour, as opposed to, you have a practice habit that you do at home in your studio, but when you're out on tour, how do things change? How's it different? What looks different?
Well, I have gotten a lot better recently. Even doing this for a long time, I'm going to be honest, I lost my way a little bit. And when I was on tour, I kind of felt like, well, I'm working because I'm on tour. And I realized that it works a lot better if I maintain my practice. So I've really picked it up a lot in the last, like I said, in the last 3 years. So now, what's different about being on tour is, first of all, usually what I work on is content for what is coming up for the workshops that I'm teaching. So it isn't so much about personal practice except for the performances that I'll be doing. So it's a little different. I don't concentrate so much on drilling because working on the content in my workshops is definitely a form of drilling. And I'm the kind of teacher that does everything. I don't make everybody do it and I sit and watch. So I'm also getting drilling while I'm teaching. And when I'm on tour, whenever I go to a new place, I try to arrange with the promoter if I can get studio time before so that I can get a good stretch, a good workout in, get into my body, do something really physical, and then work on the content and then work on my performance. And because the studio time is kind of limited, I do longer practices. It isn't so much about the little, you know, the little stuff that I do would be if I don't have access to a studio and then it's in a hotel, then I do shorter practices because it's, you know, usually carpeted and not so pleasant. But just listening to the music while I'm stretching that I'm going to perform to, that's it's useful to me, and that, and I can at least imagine going full out.
Yeah. So this is a good tip for people who might travel for work. There's so much you can do in a hotel room.
And I always check out right away what the gym looks like and if they have free weights and, you know, what are the things that are available at the hotel. They don't always have a gym available. And then I do squats holding my suitcase.
Okay. That's fantastic. I wrote down here, I don't know if you covered this, I don't think we did yet. If there's a specific way that you keep your momentum going while you're on tour.
Well, I think the specific way that I keep my momentum on tour is the same way that I keep my momentum when I'm at home, because really that this is the most important thing, because I think for a lot of people, they end up kind of getting into a spiral of shame if they don't stay on this really, you know, strict regimen that they come up with. And I found that doesn't work. It doesn't help anybody if, you know, you didn't do exactly what you planned on yesterday, and then you just start feeling bad about it, and then you end up doing nothing. So what I do while I'm on tour and while I'm home is when I wake up in the morning, I write in a journal. This helps me a lot. It helps me just kind of bring everything to a focus on what's the most important thing that I need to get done today to allow me to become the best version of myself. It kind of drowns out the noise, and I'm able to really concentrate. Okay, this is what my day is, and this is what is the most important to get done. And I accept that I become my own coach, and I talk to myself like my own coach. And I have a couple rules about my journaling, if you want to hear about it.
Absolutely, yeah, please. Yeah.
So what I do with my journal is I write, and I write as if nobody in the world other than me is ever going to read it. It's a conversation absolutely, utterly, only with myself. Yes, right. First of all. Second of all, I don't have specific rules that I have to write in my journal every day. If I don't, if other things happen and it doesn't happen that I write in my journal that day, it's the same thing. I don't go into that spiral of shame. But I find that I am more productive when I do this. Yes.
Yeah. So you're a no shame, no blame, today is a new day kind of gal.
Yeah. Okay. And then I have little sayings that I write often. The one that I've been writing the most often is I am a dancer with a dancer's lifestyle. And then I figure out, what does that mean for me today? That means that I need to take care of my instrument. I have to take care of my body. You know, it's important for me to stretch, eating well, drinking enough water, and practicing and really dancing, putting my work in. Yes. So once I write that, and then I figure out, I try to schedule out my whole day, but I don't have to stick with it. It is just, this is the best version of the day. And then if it doesn't go perfectly, I absolutely forgive myself and know that tomorrow is a new day.
Right. So you give yourself permission to be a little bit of a rebel.
Well, yes, it's okay. Like, I have an ideal day, right? My ideal day, if you'd like to hear.
Yeah.
Yes. My ideal day is I would have 2 hours of dance, 2 hours of body work. That can be stretching, could be yoga, could be working out, 2 hours of administration, and then 2 hours to take care of domestic stuff, my family. Yes. So cleaning the house and doing laundry and when I'm home, of course. But if at any moment it doesn't happen perfectly, the 2 hours, say there's snow, We have a lot of snow in Montreal. Sorry, they're removing snow from outside. Okay, here we go. So, yes, so maybe I'm practicing or I'm working on a new piece and I'm inspired and I don't want to stop. Then I'm not going to stop, right? But if I'm not feeling it, then I will put a timer and I will try to stick with it, you know, until the end. But I think the most important is that you are realistic and that you forgive yourself and you don't, like, again, go into that spiral of shame. It's okay to start again the next day. Yes. But I also know that it feels really good when I get everything done. It feels great.
Yeah. How often does that happen?
Not very often.
Because it's just not normal. Yeah. What's your minimum? You mentioned your timer.
My minimum?
Yeah.
For which?
If you're just cranky, you're really not in the mood and you set your timer, what's your minimum?
Oh man, it can be 15 minutes or a half an hour. Really.
That's all it takes. Because
as long as it is focused, deliberate practice, it's going to make a difference if it's consistent. Like if I know exactly what I want to work on, that's another thing that a lot of people have a problem with. It's like, oh, I really want to practice more, but they don't know what to practice. And they end up putting music on and just kind of bopping around a little bit. And they end up, you know, dancing and doing what they like, which isn't what you need to practice. So I'm really clear on what I want to practice and it might not be fun. That's when I put the timer and I make myself do it. And then even if it's only 15 minutes or a half an hour, I know that I've put time into something that I really wanted to change. And if it's focused and deliberate, it's enough.
Yeah. And do you find that more often than not, if you think you're only going to do that 15 minutes because you just don't feel like it, you end up doing twice as much or more?
For sure.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Once you make yourself do it. And then a lot of times I do, like, I have a reward. Like I will work on something that isn't so much fun because I suck at it or I need to get better at it. And then afterwards I reward myself by putting on music that I really love and then just dancing. Because that's also important too.
Yeah. At Belly Dance Geek, we call that getting over your inner toddler. Because it's the inner toddler in us that makes us not want to, practice. We just scream and kick and have a tantrum. And if we can get past that, you know, then everything works out okay.
Hey, I've got one other thing that I do for my personal practice if you'd like to hear about it.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people that, especially the ones that have done the Year of You, have heard all of these before. There's a couple people I see on here that have come to some of the dream camps. So they might've heard this before, but it's good to hear it. Right. I really like to prepare myself to practice, to have a little bit of a ritual that prepares my mind for the fact that I am going to work. Yes. So what I like to do is have my space be really nice. I like to light incense. Sounds a little woo-woo, but I want it to be picked up and clean and I want it to smell nice. And then I like to go in and wash my face, wash my hands, brush my teeth so I feel fresh. And then I put on really bright lipstick like we talked about before. And it just kind of gives me a little bit of a, all right, I'm going to work. It just helps get my mind ready for going to work. Yes.
That is fantastic. Good tips. Have we gone over everything that you wanted to share in depth about practice? Is there anything else before we get to the bonus stuff, which is the scoop on touring?
Anything else? I think I've covered, I feel like I want to talk about climbing Choreography Mountain.
Climbing Choreography Mountain?
Yes.
Do tell.
Well, you know, that's one of the things, you know, I started dance. I was an improv dancer. My first teacher taught with improvisation. I started working in clubs very early in my career to live music. So I had to be able to improvise and I am much more comfortable improvising than I am doing choreography. Once I started teaching workshops, I had to be able to do choreographies. and I don't find it easy or natural. And I have a very hard time sometimes in creating choreographies. And I had to come up with some tools in order to help me to do it, because there's always that situation where you're going along great, and then all of a sudden you get to a part and you just can't figure out what to do.
Oh, yeah.
And it ends up completely stopping your momentum. And then you get so frustrated that you just don't even want to keep going. Yes. So there's a couple of rules that I use for clients. Yes, I see your arm going up. Yes.
Okay. My pen is in hand. I'm waiting.
Well, I don't know. You might know these tricks already, but there's a couple of things. Like, I write in my journal.
Okay.
About it. And I am a compassionate witness to where I'm at, and I am my own coach, and I talk to myself as if I am a student of my own. Yes, I encourage myself. The other thing that I do is that I have to remind myself that I am not recreating the dance with each phrase. Like, I don't have to come up with something new and crazy and exciting that nobody has ever seen. That what I know is enough, that the dance is what it is. And as long as it's quality of movement that is done with musicality to the music, that it is enough. Yes. So what I try to do when I'm really stuck is actually when I look at a whole choreography is I like to come up with three new elements in each choreography. And that means that I'm going to grow and I'm going to do something new with each choreography, but it also gives me permission to use what I already have and what I already know, and to remind myself that the movements that are part of Oriental dance are beautiful in and of themselves, and I don't have to do them, you know, while doing hair whips and juggling on one foot, and, you know, it's like, it is enough. A beautiful shimmy is a beautiful shimmy. A Maya is a Maya. The dancers that I love to watch can do the same movement over and over again, and I'm mesmerized. So, you know, yes.
So you mentioned the three new elements in each dance. Is that, talk a little bit more about that. What do you?
Well, I like to find something that is new to me to so that my repertoire grows.
Okay.
Yes.
So not every choreography has the same five movements, just in a different plugged in place.
Yeah, well, it has to go with the music and the musicality, yes. But I also like to discover new ways to do the dance, new ways of movement. There are, you know, the technique is, since I've started, has absolutely gone through the roof. And I really like to see what else other people are doing and get inspired by other dancers and try things out and put them on and then adapt them to my movement and to my sensibilities, and I also get inspiration from taking other classes, like we were talking about, just new ideas and new ways. So yeah, three new elements.
Right on.
Yes. And my last thing is, if you come to a section that is really tripping you up, I just throw something in there that I know is not going to stay. Even if it's eight counts of a shoulder shimmy, it's an eight counts of a shoulder shimmy, because what happens is once you finish the choreography, you get a rush of creativity because you know the sections that are not 100%. And all of a sudden the feeling of being done with the choreography, I don't know if this happens with everybody, but with me, it gives me a lot. It makes me want to go back and fix those parts that are not as strong as the rest. So don't let one section trip you up. Just throw something in there, finish it, and then go back.
Perfect.
Yes.
Thank you. I'm underlining that one. I'm there right now. Okay. So you want to give us the scoop on what it's like to be a touring instructor?
All right. Tell me what you want to know.
Well, okay. Tell me what was your first workshop gig ever?
Okay, I was trying to remember this. I think the very first workshop gig that I had outside of my hometown, which is Portland, Oregon, was in Seattle, Washington. Yes.
Yeah.
And this is terrible. I don't remember exactly who it was, but I remember I didn't know what to charge. I didn't have anybody to ask these questions, and believe me, I got a really good mathematical lesson on that one because I didn't charge very much. And then I went up there and there were 50 women in the class. So yeah. After that, I have to say that was probably one of the first ones that was outside of Portland. One of the very first that was like a really big deal for me came from, it was in Salt Lake City, Utah, Midnight Mirage. I don't know if you know those ladies, but I think I do. Yeah. So they had seen, and we had been in the same event somewhere, and then I saw them at a competition they were competing at, and it was really funny because they invited me, and for me, because I was like getting on a plane and I was going to teach at a workshop, it was like my first really big deal. Like I'm flying to go teach a workshop, and I was absolutely so overprepared because I was, you know, I had notes and I had handouts and I was really overprepared. Like
4 days worth of workshop material to get through in 2 hours.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then I remember that the ladies that brought me, we found out later that it was also their very first time hosting somebody. So both of us didn't want each other to know that we were so new at it. Yes.
That's hilarious. But
that was a special time. And then I have to say another really early one that meant a lot to me was, this is good that I'm bringing this up, was at Yahala, y'all.
Yahala.
Yeah, and we're going to see each other at Yahala this year.
I'm really excited.
In August this year. Yes, so that was a really important one. And that one was, it was really early. It was an ensemble. So I was working with Amir Taleb there. And that's how I got connected with him. And he started bringing me to Argentina. And so it was just a really good one for networking. Also from Miami, Virginia from Miami was there. And, you know, it was really good networking.
She's going to be at Yahala next year too.
Yes, I saw that. I'm excited she's going to be there. I have a really funny story about that, actually. I was still really, really new. I think I had, because I had won these competitions, like people knew my name and my name was starting to get out, but it was still super early. Mm-hmm. And actually my husband had made me a t-shirt that said Aziza on it, was silk screened on it, said Aziza. And I was wearing it while I was taking a workshop with Amir Taleb. And they were doing two groups and I was sitting and waiting my turn. And this woman was sitting next to me and she kind of given me an eye. And she goes, "You must really like Aziza."
Why, yeah, as a matter of fact, I do.
I know her quite well, actually.
That's funny. Oh, golly. So a lot of these workshop opportunities came from competitions.
I would say that at that time, yes. The fact that I had won these competitions, it was, you know, it's all about word of mouth from there. Mm-hmm. And doing Belly Dancer of the Universe, and also, which other one?
Double Crown.
Mm-hmm. I have done Double Crown. Miss Belly Dance USA, and what used to be Wiggles of the West. Do you remember this one? Were you around for that one too?
I remember it. I never went to that one, but I remember it. Yeah.
Yes. Well, one thing that this is before, you know, Facebook and before all of this stuff, all the internet. So it really was about word of mouth and Belly Dancer of the Universe, and also from the website Gilded Serpent. Mm-hmm. The people who were coordinating that and running that, and Susie from IAMED also, they had recommended me to Leila Juvana. And that was the first time that I did a workshop internationally. That was in Germany.
Belly Dancer of the World, or yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. Fantastic. I wanted to know, maybe everybody else is interested too. When you are contracted for workshops, do you choose what you prepare to teach, or does the sponsor give you, you know, hey, we want you to teach this or that? How does that work?
I have a list of topics, of workshop topics, but I am absolutely open to discussing if they have something particular that they think will go over well in their market. There are some markets that only want choreography and some that do not want any choreography. So they know what goes over much better. So I will give a list and then work with them. And sometimes I do hybrids, like they can't choose between two, so that I'll work up something that will be specific for that event. I'm open to suggestions. Yes, there have been instances where people will choose for me. Yes, and what, yeah, yes. And there are some places, I won't say where, but there are some places that I have gone to repeatedly, like back again and again, and they use in their marketing all new, never before seen, the craziest, most special thing yet. And it's like, sometimes I have to really work on what I'm going to use for technique, because the way I train is, you know, it's one particular way. This is how I train. So coming up with wild and fancy new ways to do the same thing that I think is effective and works, sometimes I have to be very creative.
I guess so. Well, it keeps you on your toes, right? So what was it like touring with Assam?
It was really amazing. It was amazing. And I have, you know, it was, Assam had approached me about the possibility of touring together. And when he first approached me, it took a fair amount of time before we could figure it out with our schedules and figure out how to make it happen. And I have to say, a lot of the only way that it did happen was with a lot of help and a lot of work with my husband. He was the one that really did the coordinating, and he did all of the contracts and figured all that out, because touring with two international workshop instructors takes a lot of coordination with scheduling and stuff. So when he first approached me, I have to tell you that I just about had a heart attack. I have a lot of respect for Assam, and he had worked with, you know, some of the very best dancers in the business for sure. And I honestly had a little bit of a panic attack, just thinking, like, I understood some of the rhythms, but I didn't feel like I was a master. And that is so important, I think, for me, that if you have somebody teaching you, that they are a master at what they did. And so I had some doubts. But I have to tell you that I think it was one of the best things that I've ever done for my dancing, because it really forced me to step up, and I learned so much while I was on tour with him. So I have to say that not only was there a lot of work on the side of my husband, Eric Perot is his name, but also we had help with, we had sponsorship with the Belly Dance Shop. So that was really great to have them behind us too. Mm-hmm. And so once we started, like, the way that I approached it is, instead of trying to present myself as somebody who is an absolute master at rhythms, what I did was I approached it like, I wanted people to understand things that I wanted to know when I first started, you know?
Yes.
And try to find a way, an approach that it will really make sense, and that you can really identify the rhythms, because that was my hardest thing, is like, I could hear what was going on, but I couldn't tell you what the name was, mm-hmm. right? And I really wanted to be able to communicate with the musicians that I worked with and have them know that I know what I'm talking about. Because believe me, drummers really respect you much more if you are able to communicate to them in their language than they, oh, she knows what she's doing. So then you get better drum solos. Yes. So I feel like I learned a lot, and I had a lot of fun with him. He's a very generous instructor. He's a very, I think he's one of the best drummers for Oriental dancers. I think he's very strong. And I love being on stage with him. So it was really great. And I miss him. I wish that we could work together more.
Yeah. Well, you never know. You never know. That was the first time I ever took a workshop with you, was when you were on tour with him and you were at Yahala. Hello again. 2013, did we say that's when we thought it was?
I think it was 2012 because it was right before we actually went on tour.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So just as a little aside, I keep bringing up Yohala, and I'm going to put this on the episode page also. This is kind of bittersweet. Yeah. 20 years.
Yes.
This year. And in 2020 is the last one.
Yes.
So go if you can, because it won't be that way anymore. They're going to do something else. It'll be a different format. But yeah, last one. 20.
Yes. Y'all is a very special event. And I honestly, I'm not ashamed to say that when I heard that this was happening, I called them and said, I want to be there because it was really important to me. So
yeah, it's going to be a big deal. I was backstage 5 minutes before performing when ISIS announced that it was going to be over.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's going to be awesome. So I highly recommend it. Go if you can. And I will put information about that on the episode page. Okay. Before I get to that, these are just questions. You don't have to answer these if you don't want to, if it's not prudent from a business sense to do it. But when you're touring as a workshop instructor, is it the sponsor that brings you on your travel and lodging and all of that sort of thing? Do they take care of that for you?
Yes. So in my contract, they are obligated to pay for the flights and for accommodation. Mm-hmm. Yes, and for food.
Yeah.
The food and the accommodation is definitely during the event and one day before and one day after. So if I'm on a long tour, sometimes I do have situations where sometimes the promoter can cover me for the whole time and sometimes I have to cover for a couple days in between, but it allows me to like maybe explore a little bit. So I take advantage of that sometimes.
Yeah. That reminds me of another question. When you go on tour stops, do you have much time built in to sightsee?
No.
Okay. It's just you're in, you teach, and you're pretty much done.
It really depends. I have a lot of places that I'm a repeat, like I go to a lot. So I have kind of explored the area and I might not necessarily, you know, want to explore. I usually travel on a Wednesday. I will, so that's usually a travel day. There isn't a lot of sightseeing that'll be done that day. So I'll land on the Wednesday. And then on Thursday, I really like to try to seek out a studio. I might have private classes, but that is one day that's kind of free for me to maybe see something. But it's usually, I'm only available for maybe half of the day due to either practicing or private classes. And then the event will usually start on Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then on Monday, I am so tired. I'm tired and emotionally kaput. So there is not a lot going on Mondays. Mm. So then Tuesday is like kind of like a free day and I might go out and explore. And then I usually travel again on Wednesday.
Right on. Okay. Again, you can answer or not. Do you have a favorite sponsor?
Oh, this is hard.
Yeah.
This is really hard. You know, I have different places that I love to go to for different reasons, honestly. And that's not just me being correct. I have some sponsors that I've been going to for years that I love dearly and that they're friends. I have places that I love to go because the dance community is so really fun and outrageous. It's really hard to pinpoint. I can tell you some of my favorite ones. Let's see. You know, I've been going to, in London, I work with a woman named Charlotte DeZorner, and we actually facilitate two mentor groups that we work with together throughout the year. And then I travel there once a year, and then I get to do the graduation with the mentor groups for that year. And then we have a program, a show, where they perform the pieces they've been working on through the whole year. So that is always really special because in the course of traveling a lot, one of the things that I've really missed out on is really seeing people progress and grow. like a lot of times you just, you do a workshop and you meet wonderful people, but it's like, hello, goodbye.
Yes.
And so you really don't get to make the connection and see people grow. It's also one of the reasons that I started the Dream Camp, is because I really get to stay with a smaller group of people and you get to see things that progress. And then a lot of the people come back every year. So I get to make connections with people that that some of the things that I really missed because I don't have ongoing regular classes in any other form except for online classes, which is just when I'm not touring. Ooh, that's a lot of information I just threw out, isn't it? Kind of touched on everything there. But I will, okay, let's see. What else is a good one? I have, you know, one of the things that has changed a little bit in my traveling is I'm doing less really big festivals. Like I'm still doing them, but not as many because I really like doing more personal, doing studios where it's only me teaching and I'm able to teach more hours and also make that connection. Mm-hmm. So, I've been going yearly to Ingolstadt, and that is with one of my dear friends. I've known her for 17 years, I think. And so I go to her studio every year, and that's something that happens every year in November. Oh, I know another one that's really cool. Okay, this one, it'll be my 17th year in a row doing this.
Oh my gosh.
Yes, every year. And what's really cool about this one, it's called the Dahab Holiday Dance Festival. And this one is interesting because it's organized by a German promoter. Her name is Tara. And her concept is that she goes to a different coastal city every 2 years. So it's a moving destination and it's 10 to 12 days. And she will have like 9 or 10 different instructors. And they'll come and go, you know, like I usually stay for the full time, but some of the instructors will only come for 3 or 4 days and then they leave. But what's great about it, it's always at a beautiful place on the beach. And there's dance classes all day and it's like, it's a holiday. So you can go there for a holiday, but it's brought me to so many places. It's been in Egypt and in Spain and in France and in Tunisia and Morocco, and this year we're going to be in Calabria in Italy.
Wow.
Yeah, so that one's a really fun one because it's a lot of the same people. So it's people that I've known for 15 years too, and I see them every year.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'm going to ask you for information on that. I'll get that from you afterwards so I can put it on the episode page. We'll do email.
Okay.
I can put it on. Okay, because I can't spell all that. okay, I'm not going to ask you about your least favorite because I don't want to put you in that position, but what's the weirdest thing that's ever happened to you on tour? Just one of those things that you're like, oh my God, is this really happening?
Okay. I'll tell you about one crazy one.
Okay, and don't tell anybody else. This is just between us.
There was one crazy one, and yeah, I won't say where.
Okay, yeah.
But there are some times when people, okay, how do I say this? I had a promoter that had a really difficult time giving work to other people. She wanted to do everything herself. Do you understand?
Non-delegator or?
Yeah, she okay. would not delegate, okay. But she was too busy to take care of her artists.
I see.
So after teaching for 5 hours, she also was a Zumba instructor and she was teaching a Zumba class. So after teaching 5 hours, right before the show, we were supposed to go to the hotel. So we had to wait for her while she was checking in her Zumba students until she realized that it was impossible for her to take us back to the hotel. So then she did delegate somebody to take us to the hotel, but that person got lost. Now this is before having a GPS on your cell phone. So he got lost on the way to the hotel, couldn't find the hotel, finally found the hotel. And from the time that we found the hotel. We had 15 minutes to get ready after teaching a 5-hour class and nothing to eat.
Oh, no.
So you run upstairs and you grab your makeup and you grab your costume and you like, you know, there isn't really anything else to do. You don't have time to do anything, like a little quick. Yes. And we go down and we get into the car and we're on the way to the theater and he gets lost again.
Oh no.
So we arrive after the show was supposed to start. And there were 4 of us that were the headliners for the festival that were supposed to be headlining the show. And the guy drops us off at a huge theater complex and says, I think it's on the 2nd floor. Like it's a big, there's a lot of theaters. So we are running around trying to find this place. We went to the 2nd floor and we've got all of our costumes and it was a wedding. It wasn't where we were supposed to go. So then we finally somehow found the place where we were supposed to perform after the show had started. And the door person asked us for tickets and didn't want to let us in. I swear it happened.
Did you have to buy tickets?
No. Okay. We were so like fed up. It was amazing. And there was nothing to eat. Like we had eaten nothing. And you get there and backstage, all she had backstage was cookies and bananas. And I hate bananas. Yes, it was one of the most difficult performances that I have ever, ever, ever gone through. That one was really hard. Yes, but I did it. I performed.
Of course you did, because you're you.
You have to get through it. But it really also taught me a lesson that I really need to be also, you have to be aware, especially when you're working with new people, you don't know what to expect. And so I have to make sure I have what I need, mm-hmm. you know, just in case. Yes.
So that plays into what gets written into the contract. Yes.
Yes. I have learned a lot of things about, yes, from weird personal experiences mm-hmm. that brought me to that I have to have a hotel and I don't stay with people.
And there needs to be food.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Food is a very important thing. Okay. All right. Before we get to the question and answer, I just want to ask you, is there anything else that you want to pass on to us about anything that we've talked about? Or do you think we just pretty much wrung it all out?
Well, I can't think of anything else. I think I've just bled everything to you. Yeah, I'm interested to see what people have, if they have any questions.
We're definitely going to get to questions.
You know, and I saw on the thing that there was a lightning round and I prepared for that, if that's going to happen.
Oh, okay, later. So this is really going to be a fast one because you're ready. So we'll do that now?
Yes.
Okay, so these are just your favorite things, if you have them. You may not have all of them, but what's your favorite book?
I have 2. I know this is supposed to be fast, but okay. The one I'm reading right now is really good, Where the Crawdads Sing by Delta Owens. And I have to say my favorite self-help book is called Coaching the Artist Within by Eric Maisel. That one I keep going back to. And once you read it, you'll hear all these like key phrases that I got from that book that I keep going back to.
Oh, okay.
It's actually geared for people with writer's block, but I find it helped me a lot with a lot of my own stuff.
Yeah, okay. All right. I'll ask you for that too. Favorite food?
Today is cheese.
Okay. Favorite base color?
Right now is blue.
Favorite splash color?
Violet or purple.
Favorite day of the week?
Sunday.
Favorite poet?
I'd say Pablo Neruda.
Okay. Favorite composer?
Okay.
I know, right?
Muhammad Abdul-Wahab. I really like Abdul Halim Hafez, Warda, and Bali Hamdi.
Yeah.
So it's not just one, sorry.
Okay, all right. I'll give you that. That's because you can't pick one. What's your favorite accent?
French.
Oh, oui. Your favorite juice?
I don't drink juice, so my favorite juice is coffee.
Okay. Favorite behavior?
Goofiness.
Do you have a favorite macam?
Curd.
All right. Favorite instrument?
Oud.
I love that too. Okay. All right. Right. We're going to get to question and answer. I know everybody's got lots of questions. Before we get there, though, if people take one thing away from this call, what should it be?
Ooh, I would like people to be a compassionate witness to their dance. That has to do with forgiving yourself if you're not, if you're setting yourself up for too high of expectations. And yeah, I would like, that's the takeaway, is be really kind to yourself and talk to yourself the way you would speak to your own student or somebody that you love, because that's the best way to encourage yourself to continue and get back to it when you kind of decide to be lazy. And being lazy is okay. And yeah, that's what I like people to take away.
Okay, very good. Very good. And as far as how people can learn more from you, I know you talked about the mentorship programs with Charlotte DeZornier. And you also have one that you run with Lisa Zahia too, don't you?
Yes, I do want to mention that, yeah, Lisa Zahia and I have run some mentoring projects together, and I believe we're going to do that going forward again because I feel like it was super successful. Right now, I don't have information on that, but we are going to be doing a project together at the end of January, actually. It's my first workshop for the new year, and that's on Tybee Island in Georgia. And it's going to be a combination of me teaching dance and her working on some goal setting for the new year. It's
Okay.
kind of like the year of you that we did at Dream Camp, but it's in a different place and it's a shorter format. So, and that's going to be, yeah, Tybee Island in Georgia. And I can give you a link to that.
I
You
will. I'll put it on the episode page. I have it. Yeah.
can. And we're almost full, but there are a couple spots left. So.
Okay. All right. I'll make sure everybody gets that information on the episode page. Okay, so Dream Camp. Let's talk about Dream Camp.
All right. All right. So I started Dream Camp in 2010. It's been almost 10 years. I can't believe it. And we're up to around 30 camps that we've done.
Wow,
Yeah.
that's amazing.
So the camps are held in the summer. This year there are two, one in June and one in August. They both have been sold out though for a while. So we are looking at putting together our 2021 Dream Camp. And if you go to the Facebook site, that's where we announce it first when we have the next Dream Camps when they are ready for registration.
Okay, and that's going to be for 2020,
2021, yeah.
21. Okay, I'll make sure I get. There's going to be a lot of resources on this page. This is good. Good stuff to pass. That's good.
Yes.
I did not mention this yet, but our next Clubhouse call on January 11th, I believe it is. Is it the? No, it's the 10th, January 10th. My guest is going to be Siobhan Camille, and you have her coming as a partner.
Connection.
Yeah.
I like that girl a lot. I was really excited when I saw that she was going to be your next guest because I think this girl has a lot to offer. Her focus of her master's degree and her PhD is focused on injury prevention, and it has to do with Oriental dance. That's what her thesis was on. So yeah, so I have invited her to teach two classes at Dream Camp for this year. So.
Most
And
excellent.
I met her the first time in New Zealand, and then she moved to Montreal to go to McGill University. So we started working together, and she worked at Dream Camp a little bit. And with doing her research, I like totally picked her brain, and she helped me with some new ways to stretch. So I'm excited that she's going to get some of all of her research out there because I think it's really important.
Yeah, it sounds like she's got some really good information to share. And that is coming up on the 10th. That will be coming out in email also. If I could just get in a little plug here also about practice. Another practice resource that's coming up is the next live run of Belly Dance Geek's How to Build a Sustainable Practice Habit. This is the only time that that's going to be a live group course this year, and we start on January 13th. And basically what I'm going to be doing is teaching participants how to ditch the feast or famine practice habit. And you can learn more about that at bellydancegeek.com/habit. And I'll put that on the resources as well. Okay, so let's get to questions, because I'm pretty sure we probably have some questions here. If you have a question, please put it in the chat box and I will unmute you. That way we don't have 16 people unmuted at the same time.
Well, while they are thinking of questions, oh, I see people typing. That's good. But I do want to mention that with my online classes that I have, my first class in 2020 is actually New Year's Day.
Oh,
that's
wow.
Right. New Year's Day. Yes.
Okay.
So if you're ready to kickstart your new year, my live online group classes are Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays when I'm not on tour. So
Wednesdays, Thursdays.
Love to have you join.
And that is, they can find that at azizashimmy.net.com.
Yes, you can do azizashimmy.com. That has links that go to the Dream Camp, information on Dream Camp, and also the online classes. There's an icon that says Aziza Online TV.
Right.
And that's where you go to register. And my classes, my group classes are all live and interactive, and they happen when I'm not on tour. And if you join the Aziza Online Class Facebook page, that's when I announce all the information about the classes and when the classes are not taking place because I'm on tour.
Okay, I will put that on there as well. Okay, let's see. Okay, so I'm going to start with Charlotte. Charlotte, go ahead.
Oh, no, I just was giving, whoops, am I unmuted? Yeah, I was just giving information about how if you go into participants, you can raise your hand. There's a link there to press raise your hand. But hi, Aziza, I'm in Montreal too. I think we met a long time ago and you just look lovely and I've enjoyed this so, so much. It's really, really helpful. Thank you.
Wonderful. Wonderful. I hope that we get the chance to see each other in person since we're both in Montreal.
Yeah, your Iberville class is in Montreal, not in Iberville. Correct?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
God, I that scared me. I thought it was out. Okay. Thank you.
No. It's on Iberville Street. Yes.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. And okay, Carol has her hand raised. Okay, go ahead, Carol.
Hi, Aziza. You know me.
Oh, it's Carol Tahan. Oh my goodness. Everybody from Montreal is asking the questions. That's so great.
Aziza, thank you so much for your input. It was very interesting. I wanted to know if you could tell us a little bit about your ritual on the day of a performance, before a performance. What do you do to get prepared, either physically or mentally? What do you do?
Okay. It depends on the performance, but I can give you kind of a down low. When I'm on tour, I have oftentimes, because promoters will hire me in order to for a weekend. So that means that I will be teaching on the day of performance. So sometimes I'm really limited with how much time I have. And I do have actually a little ritual that I do when I don't have a lot of time in between getting finished with my online, with my workshop and with performance. This is going to sound really kind of crazy, but I have it down to a science. So I go back to the hotel. The first thing I do is order my room service. So I make sure I have something to eat. And then I quickly jump into the shower and I dry my hair. So that part is over, and then I spend a little time to absolutely relax when I'm eating. And from there, I will listen to my music and just kind of stretch a little bit. And then I put on my makeup and I finish my hair, and I will listen to my performance music while I do that. And that's it. And then but right before I perform, I take a moment, because a lot of times there's anxiety and I'm not grounded and centered. So I like to take a moment right before I go actually on stage and perform and kind of touch base with myself and just try to get really connected with the fact that, you know, that it is, this particular performance is going to be the only time that I am on stage with this audience at this moment, and to really give honor to that, to the fact that it isn't just trying to remember a choreography, it's about being in the moment. I try to let go of trying to holding myself to the perfect outcome, my ideal, that I remember all of my choreography, that everything goes perfectly. I let go of that and just try to honor the moment, that this moment with this audience at this time with this music and this costume, this is the only time it's ever going to happen, and just try to give magic to that moment. And then I go out and I perform. Yes.
That's wonderful to hear. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Carol. Let's see. Betty Jean has a question. All right. Go ahead, Betty Jean.
Hi, Zita.
Yes.
How are you?
Yes, I'm really good. I'm happy to see you. Yay, Betty Jean.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Nice to see you, too. You look lovely.
Thank you.
So the two questions I have is, the one is on your whiteboard, and it said Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. What's written under that? Is that like what you're going to do that day for practice or something?
No, actually, it's a little embarrassing, but I guess it's good. It's kind of touching on what it means these days, nowadays, when you are a professional dancer, and that is, I try to post on different topics on the internet. So I try to remind myself, for instance, I give myself Mondays to post about Dream Camp, Tuesdays to remind people about my upcoming online classes, Wednesday, my upcoming contracts, Thursday, do you understand? So it just reminds me, in order to stay up on the internet and on posting online, what is a good thing to post about? Because it just helps me organize. Oh,
yeah, no, that's good. That's good. Because I need to do that too, right? As far as advertising for classes and updating websites sometimes, things like that too. And that can kind of be a last minute thing where I'm like this morning, for example, oh my gosh, I got to get this out there. It's already the 30th, you know, kind of thing. So that's good to know. Thank you. The other question I had is, I've always struggled with this, is I practice regularly, pretty much, you know, 2, 3, 4 times a week, plus get ready for class. But I never feel organized. I never feel like I don't have a goal set of what I want to practice, where to get the proper resources for technique, how to build on what I'm doing. I do end up just practicing the same thing a lot, or just dancing.
Mm-hmm.
And I call that practice. So I don't know, maybe thinking like structuring it like a class or something. I don't know, like how to get more organized, you know, so that I feel like I can further, like, okay, I practice a shimmy. Okay, so then I practice 2 or 3 different types of shimmies. You know, I don't know. I just feel like I have a hard time getting it organized and focused and build uponing, so I really feel like I can look 6 months from now and say, okay, this is what I've progressed to.
Well, I think it's taking a really close look on what you want to improve, like a particular technique that you want to improve. Like you just mentioned shimmies. Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes. And using the video to practice with your shimmies, to videotape the technique of your shimmies. If you think about a certain particular shimmy that you really want to improve on, like for me, you know, the pelvic or African shimmy, that has been saved my existence. I have never liked that shimmy, but I make it part of my personal practice because I don't like it, and because I think that if I can build on it and if I can work on it, then something has to happen if I make it part of my regular practice. So I will focus on only 3 things for the week that I want to make my deliberate practice, and then I stick with that for the full week, and I that's when I fill in my yes. I think that one thing, like for you, one thing that would be really interesting is to really focus on one rhythm. Approach mm-hmm. something by, oh, this is a rhythm I'm not as familiar with. I am going to focus on this rhythm, and I am going to use this rhythm to do my drills so I will get it into my body. I will use this rhythm to create a traveling step. I will use this rhythm and create a combination. And then this way, you really get to know that rhythm. And you can even write the name of the rhythm where you practice so that you have that visual all the time, and that name will get into your head. And it just helps you to, number one, learn a rhythm. And then number two, you can do all sorts of different kinds of drills to that rhythm. And it just really, brings it home and gets it into your body. And I feel like that kind of covers a lot of things all at once.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Did that answer your question, Betty Jean?
Yeah, and just like when you were practicing your pelvic shimmy, for example.
Yes.
Where were you drawing your resources from, or your technique resource? Because, we keep trying things, and sometimes we're just, no matter how many different ways we're trying it, we're still not quite getting it. And then we still need to pull a resource from somewhere, that someone might say something that'll be like, oh. So do you watch videos, or do you?
I would say that I watch videos. I also ask colleagues when I'm on tour. I will take a private lesson from a colleague, and I will ask colleagues on how they approach it. There are, there's mm-hmm. many different teachers who approach it in a different way. And sometimes you just have to really experiment with different ways and different techniques and different approaches. And for me, it's the same thing. If you don't like the way it looks, I want it to look different. It has to feel different. So a lot of that is also experimentation for myself. And doing the video thing, because really if I think about doing the pelvic shimmy and using my hip flexors, or using, a bounce method, or using trying to see how many different ways that I can approach it and see what is comfortable for me. And it just comes with experimentation and asking colleagues or taking a class, it's the only way I know how to,
I think I need to maybe just also realize that it's not always wrong, just because if it looks good and it looks how you want it to look, it doesn't mean that it's wrong. There's no one way to do it, and that's the only way.
Right.
I think I need to also, listening to you say that, I think, okay, maybe I need to stop being like, there's only one right way. So, okay, thank you.
I don't think there's only one right way in any of this, and probably any of anything. Well, maybe some things, brain surgery, for instance, but this is not what we're doing. So anyway, Betty Jean, I'll just throw this out there. One of the things that we go pretty in depth in with the How to Build a Sustainable Practice Habit is using menus of types of practice, coming up with ways to practice different things, and Aziza went over it, but it's important when you're practicing, I think, to have stuff set up so that when you go into the studio, you're, even if you don't know what to practice, let me say it this way. When you go into the studio, having a menu of things that you can choose from makes it so that you don't have to expend brain power trying to figure out what to practice. You don't waste time. You just get in there, and if you don't know what to do, you just go through your flashcards or your list or whatever, and you just pick something. You can do the whole eeny, meeny, miny, mo. Okay, I'm going to do this, even if it's just for 5 or 10 minutes. So anyway, I'll just throw that out there.
Okay.
Christine has a question also. Let me see. Where did she go? Here we are. Okay, go ahead, Christine.
Oh, well, thank you. I have a little noise in the background, so I wasn't really planning on talking, but thank you so much. I wanted to know how you stay so motivated to stay in good shape, because I'm so tempted with high calorie foods.
Okay. Well, I will say that I have had a big life change that started exactly, almost exactly on the first, it will be exactly 3 years ago, on the first, 2017, I stopped eating sugar, completely stopped eating sugar. And that includes honey and fruit and yes. So that was a huge change for me because I also was somebody who I had a huge sweet tooth and I had a big addiction to sugar. And I was pretty much powerless over it. And once I started, I couldn't stop. So I made a big change. I gave myself 3 months that I would try it and stick to it. And if it made me miserable and I didn't feel better, then I would let it go. But I gave myself 3 months to try it. So now it's been 3 years and I keep doing it only because I feel better not eating sugar than I did when I did eat sugar. And believe me, it is, I am the most surprised that I have been able to continue this because I love sugar. But I am also, I do use stevia and I don't deny myself. Like I'm not sad because I don't eat sugar anymore because I can make just about anything I used to eat. But I just do it in a way with stevia or xylitol, which is made from bark. It's a sweetener made from bark, yes. So I know. But I will say that that change, I feel so much better and I have more energy. And just stopping eating sugar and making I think the toughest thing is traveling and the toughest thing is there's sugar in everything. So I have to be really diligent. But the benefits have outweighed the challenge. So I think that has helped me a lot and I've stuck with it because I feel better and that's it.
Okay. Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
And congratulations. That's remarkable.
It was super hard the first 10 days to 2 weeks. And after that, I have no problem. You can put anything in front of me and I have no interest in eating it. It's shocking. It's a miracle.
Because the less sugar you eat, the less you crave it, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it is amazing. Yeah, I fell off the wagon. I need to get back on it. Anyway. thank you, Christine. Okay, Charlotte has another question. Let me find her. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I've heard some Arab musicians say that we needn't worry too much about rhythms or maqams, that the most important thing is just finding the one beat that starts a phrase, I guess.
Yes.
What do you feel about that? Do you have any comments on that?
Well, I feel that the more information you have, the better. Like for me, I would not be able to hear a maqam and identify them. But it doesn't mean that I'm not going to continue working on that because I feel the more information you have on a piece of music you're going to perform to or improvise to, I think it's always interesting to know what the maqam is and to do a little research on what the emotional content that goes with that maqam. It's just, it gives you more information about the song. So I still think that that is important. Identifying the rhythms. I also think it is important to be able to at least have a foundation and an understanding so that you can identify what rhythm is being played. For me, I really like to work with focusing on rhythms and combinations to particular rhythms so that no matter what, if a song is being played and I don't know the lyrics, if I can identify what the underlying rhythm is, I have a way to approach performing to it. And finding the downbeat, I know that I have a lot of students that have asked me, not a lot, I have had a couple that have asked me that struggle with finding the downbeat. And this is something that I also have tried many different approaches in order to get people to understand it, because for me, it comes naturally. Mm. And I don't mean to brag, but really it does, it comes naturally. I can hear where the downbeat is. And because I know the rhythms and I know, you know, the ones that don't start with a doom and I can hear it, right? Then right. I know right. where it is. And if I know what the rhythm is underlying, then I know where a one is for that rhythm. Do you right. understand what I mean?
Yeah. That's helpful. Yeah.
Yes. So I do think knowing what the rhythms are is helpful in order to find the downbeat and to find the one. But I understand your struggle, and you know, I'm always trying to find new ways to get people to really hear it and to understand it.
Thank you.
It is difficult. It doesn't come naturally to everybody. Anyway, okay, fantastic. These were some great questions. Does anybody have anything else that they want to ask before we let Aziza go? We are pretty much coming up on our time. I want to respect your time. Anybody else? So I'm just going to close it out here and say thank you, everybody, for coming. This is the end of the call, but the conversation is not over. We have a private Facebook group for the Clubhouse, and you'll get an email shortly with a invitation to join that group. And there's a little bit of an approval delay, so give me a little bit of time to approve your entry into that group. There's also going to be a link for the call recording. Only the audio of this call, and links to all of the resources mentioned in the call will be on the episode page, and which I will link to. And there will also be a survey. If you've got ideas for topics, people that you'd like to hear on the Clubhouse, improvements that I can make, anything, just whatever. I love to hear about those things. Tell me. And I mentioned before, our next call is on January 10th at 12 noon Pacific, another odd time. And it's so that we can get Siobhan, who is in the Netherlands, on with us. And lastly, this is the kind of Clubhouse, it's not the no boys allowed, it's the come on in kind. So if you know someone that would be interested, please invite them to join us at bellydancegeek.com/clubhouse. And I didn't mention this before, but Siobhan's call is going to be on about avoiding injury through science and structure. And she's done a lot of research, and she's got some really great tips to share with us. Maybe some things that you haven't heard before that relate to avoiding injury specific to our dance genre. So I hope you'll join us. Thank you, Aziza. Thank you so much for coming. And it was wonderful. You are a delight.
Oh, it was my pleasure. And come join me in my online classes, because, hey, let's keep it going.
Yes. And I had to say, I have taken an online class, only one so far, but the classes are fabulous. So
there's a couple other of my students that joined, too. I saw their names. So, yay.
Fantastic. Good stuff. Anyway, Happy New Year, everybody. And we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. For more Geektacular resources, check out bellydancegeek.com.